the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, this is Bobby Golden, and we're coming back at you again with a new episode of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. Have with me Jason Bond, like always, and we've got Chief Economist, I always say that, Chief Economist at Stoneville, Dr. Larry Falconer with me, and he didn't want to whistle in like Tom did last week, so we'll
He claims he has no talent.
I think he has mad number skills. But, you know.
Voodoo skills on the numbers.
Yes, and unfortunately, we don't got a happy tune here to whistle either. Although, I think there's some reason for optimism here, particularly on the corn side of it.
Yeah, corn's out the field. That's some optimism, and we're still plagued with rain showers and...
Hey, but the sun's out now, though, dude.
The sun's out, but the ground's wrecked in some places, so hopefully we're hurrying up.
Well, if, as long as the sun's out, I mean, that's under the circumstances, that's the best you can hope for. So at least it's doing some drying. It's not raining right now.
It's not raining right now, although it's still supposed to rain some this week.
I understand, but it's not raining right now, so that's you got to take the positive where you get it, bud.
Half full or half empty, huh?
That's right. That's right.
So, Larry, you got a big stack of papers there. Heard you shuffling them a while ago. Where you want to begin? I know I've got a couple things I want to ask you, but I want you to start off where you're comfortable at this morning.
If it's okay, I'll just tackle the biggest market first for us down here, and that'd be the soybean market. And you'd asked previously about basis and definition of basis and what happens or what the market's trying to tell you when the basis is kind of quote-unquote weak. The classic definition of basis is the price in your local cash market less the futures price that your elevator or export market or, you know, your local end user is quoting bids off of. In this case, most of what we'll be talking about is the November soybean futures contract at this point. If we're looking at a situation where our cash market is considerably weaker relative to the futures market, as it is in this case, what's the market trying to tell you? Well, there's a couple of ways of looking at that, and one is that in conjunction with what the deferred futures contract, like say the March 2019 or the July 2019 contract is selling for. If we've got a situation like we got now where the November 2018 futures are selling at a pretty significant discount to the out months, and you've got a historically very weak basis, what the market's telling you is it doesn't want your soybeans right now. Same way on any storable commodity, could be corn, rice to a lesser degree.
So, Larry, give us a general example of that with some numbers, just some round numbers.
Yeah, if we're kind of looking at where we were last weekend, if you look at where our futures were at relative to what was being printed as a cash bid in Greenville, you were looking at a basis of about 60 cents under, where your cash market was 60 cents under the November futures. Historically, that number's positive.
For soybeans,
yeah, and corn too. This time of year, it depends on time of year.
Well, I was going to say, you know, the first time I ever saw basis catch a lot of guys off guard was with a big wheat crop, what, that was probably 7 or 8 years ago?
Yeah, something like that.
Well, what the market's telling us, the soybean producer at this point, is if there's any possible way that you could store that crop, that's what you need to do. The big worry that I have here is that if you look out to like March 2019, where we were on Friday, you know, in the 870-something, look at July at about, or May would probably be the better contract in the high 880s. I believe it was like 882 this morning. Calculate that out, depending on the number that you want to use, even for commercial storage, and that's about 90-something percent of full carry. And everybody in the United States is looking at that number. Those poor fellows that are up selling it for more than a dollar under up in the Dakotas, up in there, you got the same problem. So it's certainly going to pay you to store if you go out and sell that carry. And that's the hard part to do, because heaven knows the flat price is no good.
Right.
You know, you're not going to like that. But at this point, you're in the grain storage business. You're not in the production business. You're just kind of trying to add some value.
And at what point does the cost associated with storing it, say, on farm storage,
mm-hmm.
where do we start losing storing versus just getting rid of it?
Oh, at this point, figure it costs you 3 cents a bushel per month to carry it on farm. You know, I hear that number thrown around a lot. The number I was talking about before was, you know, commercial storage at about a nickel bushel a month. It's going to pay you to carry it out to May for sure.
Okay. So that's almost like a no-lose as long as you carry it and get rid of it on that May contract.
If you sell it against it, you're going to add value to it. The reason that it starts tailing off, I believe, is that they're looking at another pretty good-sized South American crop in the mill. The weather's improved down there. Their planting pace is ahead of last year and ahead of average, and their acreage is expected to be up. Now, having said all that, for most years, we should be putting the bottom in our cash market. You know, right in this time period, if you look, going back into the years like 2014, 2015, 2011 was another year, you know, you bottomed out first part of October. You know, we may not have, you know, they may make another run at the lows here, but.
So does that generally hurt us or help us, being that we're one of the first in the U.S. to have our soybean crop out of the field?
I would say that this is an excellent place to, I'm going to dodge that just a little bit.
Okay.
What I'd like to say is this is an excellent place to market grain. I would say that the fact that it bottoms here doesn't really make a big difference in our marketing plan. Everybody's going to say, well, you should have had it all sold back on the big break that we had
right
about 3 months ago. And that's the hindsight's 2020, of course. But at this point in time, what you'd be looking at, hopefully, is basis improvement to work with you on that grain. So not only, you know, looking at where we're at on going out and selling the futures, hopefully you'd have, you know, good basis improvement as you go along, because heaven knows they get that grain put away up north if they don't start getting some pretty decent bids out of the Pacific Northwest on those beans. They're going to lock them up. They're not coming out. So
right,
our basis here should improve faster than anybody else's, in my opinion.
Larry, what's the primary driving factor for the level of that basis? I
mean, it's exports.
Not, it is.
Yeah. It's exports, and here on soybeans for us it is. You know, we got good domestic demand, but we don't crush a lot of soybeans in this area.
So then the basis kind of reflects the driving forces that influence the basis are similar to the driving forces that influence the commodity price too.
Pretty much. There's going to be, you know, domestic demand will play into it. You know, when you get up in Illinois and over in Iowa where they got, you know, more crushing plants than we got here for soybeans.
Where they've got stuff to feed.
Yeah. Yeah, we got stuff to feed.
So, Larry,
not near as many hogs, though. I mean, if you're talking about catfish.
Yeah. With on-farm storage.
Yes, sir.
What would you suggest to a guy that has some corn and he's already got, you know, he has on-farm storage and he's already got corn in his bins, but he's interested in storing soybeans? Does he move the corn out, or is it better? Is corn in the same situation and we need to hold corn?
That's a good question, because what we got going on with the corn is we got, you know, as opposed to the beans, which, you know, I think is primary export, you know, we got pretty decent domestic market here for the corn as well. You know, it can go either direction. If I'd already, you know, depending off already had a contract to deliver it to the poultry people, you know, I might look at hanging on to the corn, and it's probably a dirty word around here, but, you know, you don't have to hold this stuff a long time to make some money, and it's probably a little bit late, but, you know, even bagging, I'd take a look at that. But if you're just looking at repayment to your on-farm storage, right now the beans are going to pay more than the corn does.
Yeah, so hold the beans is what I hear you say.
If you can, but like I say, you're going to have to probably sell that carry out there, because when it rolls around time, if you know, if they have a big South American crop, if the stuff doesn't move here,
You're going to have to dump them quick.
You're going to dump them, and everybody else is going to be doing the same thing. And there's a good chance that that carry could just erode as you go. You know, I wish I had better news on that, but we don't right now. But looking forward on the beans, the 2019 crop, the expectation is, and Informa Economics come out with a guess on acreage last year. Last week, I believe it was, might have been week four last, where they were looking at bean plants probably down about 7 million acres. You know, if you get a reduction like that, even if they do have a big crop in South America, you'll see better flat prices next year.
So that beans down 7 million acres, that's pretty much dictated by the Midwest, and that means we're going to have a lot more corn next year.
That's what they're looking at. Corn and wheat, probably. They're looking at corn acres being up about 4 million acres, and then rest of it be wheat, maybe a little bit of cotton.
So in general, and I know I'm sidetracking off what you want to talk about, but I think this stuff is cool. When we have a big corn crop in the Midwest, that's better for southern soybean producers.
Generally speaking, probably, yeah, acreage-wise, if you're talking about acreage-wise,
right.
Yeah, if they cut the bean acreage back up north, then we should see some improvement in price here.
So should we run planting intentions in the Mid-South based on what's going on in the Midwest to capture a better price?
I'd think so, Bobby. I wouldn't. Last year when we were talking at the row crop short course and stuff, the corn, you know, looked better, and the corn has performed better. I mean, it, you know, hadn't burned a track up, but it's better than it was last year. If you look at the stocks to use ratio, it's pretty manageable. I know our listeners can't see it, but I'll hand y'all around a little chart here. On our stocks to use ratio here, we're double where we were last year on the beans. I mean, we're off the chart, and we just got to work through that. And it can be done in 1 year, in one crop year. It's going to be kind of tough. I don't know if I answered your question or not.
Oh, no.
What I would say is stick with my rotation.
Right.
I would not be scared of growing soybeans in 2019 relative to corn, and I wouldn't have told you that this time last year.
Well, that's good news. You wanted some good news. If you're not scared, I'm not scared, Larry.
Yeah. Well, I wasn't going to plant a lot anyway. It should be a better situation.
If you're encouraging someone to store soybeans, they're going to be storing soybeans that they don't already have under contract for this year. So then how do you manage the bills that are left to pay, it, assuming that the price you have contracted on a quantity of soybeans is not sufficient to cover the bills that are left?
Yeah, Jason, that's a good question. Where you'd be on that, and once again, probably wouldn't be the best of situations, but go to Farm Service and get a CCC loan on them. Now, you're only going to get about $5 a bushel loan to you on that collateral that you got, and they'll have to come out, and them being Farm Service, and measure the grain, strap a tanks, or however they're going to do it. But it's a non-recourse loan, and you know, if the market fell completely apart and it actually fell below the $5 per bushel level, you can just give the crop up for it. It's kind of like it's exactly the same program that folks use on cotton.
Well, speaking of cotton and that new program that's coming out and having to change base acres, and I've heard a lot of people say, oh, no more generic acres. We did good with generic acres. So give us a rundown on that. I know the sign-up period's come and went, or is it still in?
Okay. There is a deadline here that's really close. For any farm that does not have any generic acres on it right now, producers need to make sure that they get signed up on those farms by the end of the week, because at the start of fiscal year. Now, when last time we talked, the deadline for distributing those generic base acres to either this seed cotton program or one of the other covered commodities was the end of this week as well. That's been extended till December 7th. You don't have to make a decision, but if you don't make a decision, what will happen is you'll lose 20% of the acres that were generic acres, and then you'll be put into a price loss coverage program on the seed cotton. And that may be the option that a lot of folks take anyway.
Because they're not willing to pull the trigger just yet, or?
No, it just looked like a better alternative. Here on the station, we got it's kind of a funny story. We got the paperwork we were looking for got mailed to Starkville, and it sat over there on somebody's desk for about 8 weeks, and we finally got it back. But we got we're doing the analysis on that, and on the three farm numbers here, because we plant cotton for experiments, of course. That's why they call a experiment station. But
that's right.
we planted pretty close to our base, so we will probably either go with the alternative of using the higher what we planted, or we'll have enough rice and a little bit of peanuts that we'll distribute those acres that way. That would be the minority of the folks that I've dealt with so far. That would be the minority that would look at distributing according to their 2009 to 2012 planting percentages.
So what's your crystal ball tell you about cotton, Larry?
I think that for the cotton that's to be gathered this fall, I think prices will probably recover some. From the way the market's acting, I don't know that we'll be able to get the futures market back up and break through that 90-cent level, you know, that we saw. But prices will be generally good. For next year, you know, it's kind of like looking at some alternatives. There'll be a lot of cotton planted next year. Not just here, but
throughout the belt.
Yeah, throughout the belt. And depending on the yield, you know, we could be in a situation where we could see some weaker cotton prices coming down the road for the 2019 crop.
It's all supply and demand.
Yes,
Jason.
Pretty much. Unfortunately, yeah.
That's right.
Price goes up, plant a big crop, and price goes down.
As long you're up, but you're okay as long as you don't forget to sell it. I try not to be a wise guy about it. I know it's a painful process, but if a person, you know, can look at an opportunity to, you know, find somewhere where, you know, you can cover a lot of the cash flow that you need, you know, sell a chunk of it.
Well, and you talk about supply and demand, Bobby, but we've talked about that on here before relating to rice, that our rice acreage can swing pretty wildly, and that's based on the price. So, I mean, until something changes in the way we sell our commodities, you know, they're going to be handled like commodities, and we're going to chase the price. I mean, that's my opinion.
And unfortunately, you know, that might be fine with corn and cotton and soybeans, but with rice, we grow it, farm it, trade it like a commodity, and it's a food crop. It's not a commodity.
That's right.
But if you're talking about cotton, I think there's a chance, you know, you've retraced about 50% of the move. So on a December cotton, so that's going to be somewhere around 77 cents a pound. Where we hit it, bounced, that was the first one of those retracement levels that we saw. You get the crop put away, the thing, you know, we get going a little bit on some domestic demand. Say you get December 2019 cotton up above 80 cents a pound. I think a person probably needs to look at pricing some cotton there.
He's got to move there.
Yeah. I mean, today we're about 76 and a half, something like that. You know, 300-point rally between now and spring is probably doable, I think. Pretty easy. Should happen. If the market's any good at all,
right,
it should be able to do that.
So we spoke briefly about rice, and you said you had a brief thing you wanted to say about rice. Where are we at on rice? We've covered all the major commodities but rice.
You know, the rice market's, and looks to me like it's a little bit between the corn and the soybeans in its supply-demand picture. Hopefully, you know, you see post-harvest rally and get things going. But once again, export demand's going to drive a lot of that.
Yeah, we need a better domestic market for our rice crops for sure. Well, guys, we're getting a little long-winded. You got anything else, Larry, that you want?
No, sir.
You got any concluders there, Jason?
No, I'm good, man. Larry always blows my mind. I mean, you just think about the stuff you don't know.
The stuff, well, same here. I mean,
well, I've said this multiple times in the last several years, you know, it ain't just about growing a crop anymore. If you're a farmer, you're a agronomist, marketer, businessman, need to have a loan shark somewhere in there. So, I mean, it's not one single hat. It's about 37 you got to wear to get a crop in, out, and feed the family.
Well, I'd just like to wish everybody the best of luck with the rest of harvest here. That's important. You know, hopefully we'll have good weather from here on out, and things will go smooth.
So, Larry, you broke it to us last time that you were on with us that you're headed to the North Country for the first year. So how are the grandbabies doing?
Good. good. I think everybody's real good. I kind of created a monster. I was coming back from Loosedale last Thursday and just stopped a little bit north of Onward there. They had a cotton patch that the defoliating it opened up, and it was really pretty. So I stopped and took a picture and told them it looked like it had been snowing in Mississippi. And that's next thing they want to do is they want some cotton. So I had to slide around, pull a few bowls, and get them in the mail for show and tell there.
Not a lot of cotton in Maine.
No, not a lot.
Is there any?
Not that I know of.
I'd be willing to bet no.
No.
And before anybody gets too excited, I made sure that it wasn't something that was patented or an experiment or something, because I'd probably rather be in a federal pen than a state lockup.
It's better to ask forgiveness than permission, Larry.
Well, and
I asked, man.
What Elmer always said, you don't want to go to parchment, boy. All right, guys. Well, we appreciate having Larry on again.
Well, thank y'all.
We will get Larry on at least one more time, if not twice, before he departs for the great white north. So, like always, if y'all got any questions, just give us a shout.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.